Welcome to the Victory Podcast.
Hey, Victors, welcome to this episode of the Victory Show. If this is the first time you're joining us, I'm Travis Cody, bestselling author of 16 books and the creator of Bestseller by Design. I've had the privilege of helping hundreds of business consultants, founders, and entrepreneurs write and publish their own bestselling books as well. And along that journey, I've discovered a really fascinating pattern. Most businesses hit a revenue plateau, usually around $1 million a year, and they struggle to break through it. So on this show, we sit down with some of the world's most successful founders, CEOs, leaders, and business owners to uncover the strategies they use to overcome those plateaus and scale their businesses to new heights. So more importantly, you can do the same. So get ready for some deep insights and actionable takeaways that you can implement in your life and business starting now. My guest today is a powerhouse in the mortgage world who's built more than just a fast-growing company. He's built a movement around helping loan officers win. Joseph Chalabi is the founder and CEO of eMortgage Capital, one of the fastest-growing mortgage platforms in the country. Known for being direct, strategic, and unapologetically focused on results, he's created a model that gives loan officers the infrastructure, compensation, and brand power they need to scale fast and smart. Now, Joseph's impact goes beyond just business growth. He's also the voice behind the standout industry podcast, Coffees for Closers, where things get more casual and unfiltered as he dives into mindset, business, and everything in between. So whether it's through leadership, content, culture, Joseph's mission is simple and powerful. Help good people build great businesses. Joseph, thank you for taking time out of your day to be here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I love that you also have a show where you talk about the mindset, especially as it comes into business. And we'll get into that. But let's talk a little bit about your background, because you have such a fascinating background of where you've come from and what you've been able to accomplish. So tell me where you were born.
So yeah, I was born in Cairo, Egypt, immigrated to America when I was 5 years old. I come from, you know, very poor roots. So I have a very humble beginning, and it's allowed me to really leverage all the resources in a totally different way, just because I maintain like a poverty mindset in everything I do. So I came from Cairo, Egypt, from a town called Halmeyat al-Zaytoun, which is a very poor part of Cairo. So I jokingly say, because Egypt is a third world, and I'm from the third world of that third world. So I'm really from like the sixth world. So, you know,
you're like in the Detroit, they say there's the east side, right? And the east side is the poor part. So you're from the east side of Cairo tracks.
Yeah, exactly. I'm from the poor part of the poor part. And now I'm in Newport Beach, and I'm in the most affluent area in the world. And I still maintain a perspective where, you know, I still want to get the best deal, still want to get the cheapest things. I still try to grind all my partners, my vendor partners, or my, you know, whoever I'm working with, I'm always still, you know, able to charm people into getting free stuff. So I'm still maintaining.
Oh, that's funny. So because of that background, and obviously you have that culture there, as you were coming up, did entrepreneurship kind of find you early? Were you one of these guys that like 10 years old started figuring out ways to hustle for money?
So that's funny that you asked. That's actually in my book, my first business that's coming out. My first business that I started actually was when I was 14 years old, and it was basically at a hookah bar, and I started doing events at a hookah bar at the age of 14, and they were like, you know, kind of like nightclub events. I was able to leverage my culture as an Egyptian, my language being fluent in Arabic, and the fact that I'm a white, blonde, Caucasian guy, white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Caucasian guy, that no one can believe when Arabic comes out of my mouth, and the fluent nature of my Arabic, the words that are coming out of my mouth. So they're just baffled.
So is it fun to walk into a room and start speaking Arabic and then just see everybody turn and look at you like, wait a minute.
It's hilarious. And I grew up in a culture where, you know, I literally was the only white guy. So I grew up, you know, almost in like a reverse racism, you know, like people were racist against the token white guy. Picked on him because he was white, you know?
Oh, that's funny. I have a friend he's half black and he's fairly light skinned. And he grew up in Detroit. That's why I came up with that thing. But he talked about that, how all the black kids used to beat on him because he was too white to be part of the black crowd.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I grew up. And we grew up in a very poor part of America as well, in Bellflower. So when we came to America, my parents, fortunately, you know, kind of had to climb the ladder. But fortunately, they kept us in the church. But the church where I grew up at was in Bellflower. You know, all the Egyptians, you know, they more assimilated to you know, African-American culture. So then I had to assimilate to my culture, and then I basically had to assimilate to the African-American culture, and I was way off, you know, like a white guy.
It's confusing as a kid.
Yeah.
To figure out where you're fitting into.
Confusing.
All right. So you started at 14. Now, did you always have eyes on like eventually go to college or do that sort of thing? Or did you just go straight into business?
No, I mean, I always was an entrepreneur at 14. I started working at 14. I started, you know, doing events and, I've always kind of had an entrepreneurial mindset. But, you know, after college, I wanted to go into academia. And a friend of mine told me, you know, if you're going to be just a professor, you're going to be dead broke. You'll never be able to move to Newport Beach. You'll just make $70,000 a year and you'll just be sitting there, you know, on the beach in Santa Barbara. Cause I went to Santa Barbara. I loved Santa Barbara. I didn't want to leave Santa Barbara. And the way Santa Barbara structures college is that they don't allow you to go from university bachelor's degree straight into PhD. They make you leave and then come back.
Wow. So
I left to get my master's in sociology with the intention to go back to Santa Barbara for my PhD, but that's not how the cookie crumbled. I ended up, you know, getting convinced to go into the mortgage industry to chase money and start my, you know, my mortgage venture, which ended up, you know, being a huge struggle in the beginning because at the time before the great crash of 08, the people that the mortgage industry attracted were just like the equivalent of criminals because there wasn't any regulation. So I got ripped off so many times. And it forced me to start my own mortgage company just because I was getting ripped off so frequently.
Wow. That sounds like a book in and of itself right there.
Yeah, I actually didn't mention that part in my book, so we'll have to put that in there.
All right. So you were doing mortgage pre-crash, and then you started your own company, and then, you know, then you, just like everyone else, you dealt with the crash. So is that when the ideas that you started having for the e-mortgage business started to kind of
e-mortgage percolate? Capital came right when basically, post Dodd-Frank, 2008 through 2011, I left the mortgage space. I went to law school and I started a loss mitigation firm. And then I was like, you know what? The mortgage industry is making a comeback. Regulation has loosened. Banks are lending again. And, you know, now they've added these additional regulations to where you have to have a license so they could kick out all the weird people in the business. So I went and got licensed in 11 and started eMortgage just as eMortgage, not eMortgage Capital, just eMortgage by itself as a DBA. And then I eventually incorporated in 2015 and then started building a platform for other mortgage professionals in 2015.
So I just want to stop back because you just said something that kind of blows my mind. 2009, 10, mortgage brokers didn't need a license to be a mortgage broker.
That's right.
Okay, so let's talk about
the broker. The loan officer did not.
Wow. So what, like, in terms of how many, like, I don't know if you know this number off the top of your head, but how many mortgage brokers were there pre Dodd-Frank? And then when that
I have no idea. Millions, probably.
So like them putting a licensing requirement on the mortgage industry wiped out what?
Everybody.
75% of mortgage brokers.
I mean, a lot of people try to do it without a license, but yeah, like it wiped out a great deal of the people who thought they were professionals. Plus, the industry itself imploded, but a lot of people didn't want to come back to the business. And a lot of people that did, and the people that did make it back to the business had to get a mortgage license, which they didn't want to go through that hurdle. I was already, before the crash, I was already a mortgage broker, a licensed mortgage broker. So I had already had my real estate broker's license. However, I didn't have my mortgage license, which that was an additional requirement.
Wow.
Yeah, I started my first mortgage company in 2005 because as a loan officer, the guy who I was working for just was taking all my money.
Yeah, I could see why they would do that. So where did the idea for the eMortgage Capital come from? Because I mean, in 2015, looking ahead at building an e-platform for that was pretty forward thinking back then.
Yeah, so what happened was after the crash, what I did was I wanted to bring back what we had available during the, you know, before the crash, which was something called like a branch model, where people could come to me, use our platform for other states, and then I would just make a small percentage. And that's all it was. Like, you know, now we have like branches, but now it's turned into a full end-to-end ecosystem for mortgage companies. Wow. If you're a mortgage company, you would just come to us and we'll just power your brand. We'll give you your technology, marketing, branding, infrastructure, automations, training, coaching, onboarding your loan officers, payroll, licensing, support, compliance, audits, surety bonds. I mean, the list goes on and on. so that a mortgage company doesn't have to deal with all that. Now they just come to us and we're just like completely end-to-end ecosystem. They don't have anything to worry about. They don't have all the problems to worry about that a mortgage company typically does. All they have to worry about is what they came into the business to do, which is produce, get business. But the problem is there's hyper regulation on this industry. And now mortgage professionals are like working on compliance 90% of the time, not working on the actual business.
So isn't that crazy?
All their opportunity to make money. So yeah. If you're a mortgage professional, this is the model.
So you're saving people 90% just by taking off the paperwork, essentially.
Yeah.
Compliance.
Because we're continuing to innovate and we spend millions of dollars a month on our ecosystem. So a mortgage professional that owns their own mortgage brokerage is spending $3,000-$4,000 a month. That's it. We're spending millions. So they have no way to compete with us. You know, and we're and the way it works is it's compounding, right? All of our technology initiatives, infrastructure, support, it just compounds. So we're like light years ahead of everybody. So they're like, why are we going to try? We can't duplicate this. We can't get licensed in 48 states. You know, like we're only licensed in one state or two states. We don't want to deal with these auditors or these lawsuits or this TCPA or whatever. We don't want to build a brand. We don't want to build a social media presence. We got millions of followers. We got 20,000 five-star reviews. How is someone going to compete with that?
Wow. All right. So let's talk about the first few years then. You're because this is, you know, two separate things. You're running your mortgage business, but you're also building an e-platform. What were the challenges that you faced kind of pivoting in the type of business that you're running? And start there, and I have a follow-up question to that.
So the biggest challenge for any mortgage company is always compliance. It's a hyper-regulated space. So, you know, getting licensed in different states, various audits, all of that stuff is, you know, really what hinders a mortgage company's ability to scale and grow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I were to pinpoint one challenge, there, I couldn't even begin to do that because we have challenges, big challenges, like daily, you know. So we got 1,000 loan officers, probably 2,000 personnel. It's a 3,000 person company.
Wow.
And it's decentralized nationwide, you know, so there's people all over the country and we're massive. So all we have is targets on our back from every state regulator. We're on a name by name basis. And we're not like a regular company. Where we're regulated by like the state of California. We're regulated by California, Montana, Nebraska, Illinois.
That state has their own requirements.
And then, no, the regulators themselves. And then you have the additional regulation where there's multiple regulators in every state. Then you have like federal regulators. So, you know, we're dealing with a lot of that all the time. And then, you know, some of the, there's challenges in every vertical. There's challenges with compliance. There's challenges with marketing. There's challenges with branding. There's challenges with technology. There's challenges with HR. There's challenges with IT. Like there's challenges with training. There's challenges with coaching people. I mean, so we're facing various challenges and everything we continue to scale so that the people that work with us don't have to worry about those challenges. They just have to worry about a solution that's always getting better. And that's what we want to do. We just want to continue to improve, invest, and make this the platform that everyone knows is the absolute best in class in the world.
I love it. So let's talk a little bit about your industry then, because you've got so many brokers underneath you. Obviously, you know, the show and the book we're working on is all about people that successfully scale past $1 million. So just in the mortgage industry, you talk about mindset all the time. What have you seen is the difference between a seven-figure broker and somebody who never cracks a seven-figure mark?
So a seven-figure broker implements technology, builds relationships, and buys leads and data and marketing and invests in their brand. So they're kind of like hitting it from all angles. They're not just like, oh, I'm going to go build relationships and rely on realtor business, or, you know, they're building their personal brand, they're building relationships, they're buying leads. They're building a team. They're always working on different data solutions, split testing various technology. And this applies not just to mortgage. This is any entrepreneur. You know, like you could take the mindset, the strategies, and the business development techniques that we show folks here, and it relays over to any business vertical pretty much, like identical.
So you said something really interesting. I haven't had anybody on the show talk about yet, which is actually spending the money to buy qualified leads. And I feel like most, if we're in this interesting phase where a lot of people think, well, you know, I should be running, you know, oh, social media will solve it, or content will solve it, or, you know, building my community will solve it. And you're going, that's all part of the ecosystem and the branding, right? But you're saying, yeah, you can also just go buy your leads and then put those.
Well, you have to do everything you just said. That's true. But that doesn't solve it. Nothing solves it.
Sure.
The way you have to look at marketing is like a table. Okay. Now, if I have a flat table and I'm like, okay, here's my realtors, here's my community, here's my personal brand, here's, I could just put realtors. That's one leg on my table. Okay. But then I add this leg and I add this leg, and my table is like very stable. Put one leg on there, that thing is shaky. Put two legs on there, it's a little bit more stable, but still shaking. 40 legs on my table. I got podcasts, I got book, I got marketing, I got leads, I got voicemail drops, email drops, blah, 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 blah. The list goes on. I got like 100 legs. I come up with a new leg every day.
Yeah, I love it. All right. So let's go back a little bit to your business when you were getting started, and let's talk about some of the challenges. Obviously you're huge now, you know, but you weren't always there. So, you know, do you remember when you were going from, you know, from trying to scale from a million a year to 5 million a year, what some of the challenges were with you getting to that point?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've always been a seven figure producer alone, over seven figures. And, you know, the challenges, and it's still the same thing when we go from seven figures to eight figures to nine figures to 10 figures, is just continuing to recruit and continuing to innovate and continuing to bring, you know, the best in class solutions for the people I partner with. Because I'm a partner. The people that work with us are our partners. So it's all scaling for me. You know, going from seven figures to eight figures, or from six figures to seven figures, it was all scaling. The first, from six to seven figures, was just scaling for me personally, leads, marketing, data. Seven figures to eight figures was like still all scaling for me personally. And then I had to scale for the people, you know, the recruits that I got, right? And help them strategize.
So you had to show them basically how to do what you just did.
Exactly.
How does that, was that an interesting experience then, when like you've done it yourself and now somebody's like, hey, can you teach me how to do it? So you're kind of have to reverse engineer everything you just did.
With the playbook.
Yeah.
You know, you have an optimized playbook, period.
So what does that look like for you?
It's a combination of technology, marketing solutions, lead vendor relationships, automation cadences, and what to say, what to text, what to email, where to buy data, who are proven vendors, because there's a lot of vendors that promise you the world and deliver nothing, and making sure that people are doing it daily. It's consistency. Like, you can't market, have a great month, take 2 months off, which a lot of loan officers do. You know,
they shouldn't laugh, but that sounds pretty funny. They're like, do a really good month and then they do nothing for a couple of months.
Yeah. And then the 2 months they don't work, then it spirals into 3 months of no income.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like your win was your win, but you try to double that the following month. And we try to do the same at our level. Like, we had a great month last month. We did, for April, I think we did like $460 million. And we sent out an email like, we want to double that this month. We're not going to double it, but we'd like to double it.
You're
going to
try.
Yeah, we're going to die trying. But we're going to probably do more than 500 million. You know, we should see a 10 to 15% uptick. Mind you, the market is like the highest rates we've ever had in, you know, 10 years.
Yeah. Or longer than that. Years. We're probably highest rates in 15 at least.
Yeah, 15 years. So, you know, we're in the sevens for 30-year fixed right now. Like, that's a high interest, but the demand for housing is going up. It's not going down. And if you follow me on Instagram, I always do videos about where the housing trends are, where the job employment trends are. You know, 274,000 jobless claims last month. It's less jobs, but higher demand, you know, like higher demand for housing. Like, people don't have jobs and people still want houses. It's all inverted.
Wow. So one of the things I know you talk about on your show is culture. How big of importance is culture in what you do with eMortgage Capital?
So my show I interview founders and CEOs of, you know, sometimes publicly traded companies, sometimes Fortune 500 companies, sometimes just like companies that you and I use on the daily, like Travis Matthew or Chrome Hearts or something, which I use on the daily, all those products for the apparel stuff. And culture is important to all CEOs, right? Because people got to like where they work, they got to love where they work, or they're not going to love their job, or they're not going to give you all their effort. So we spend a lot of time and effort and money on building an awesome culture for people, you know, whether it's events, whether it's community building, team building things, summits, you know, various meetings that we do virtually. So we spend a lot of time trying to build a community for people to actually partake in, to feel something that they're bigger than just them alone on this island.
Yeah, and that's important. I just had a conversation with somebody earlier today. We're talking about we're moving into the era where people obviously want to make good money, but they also want to feel impactful and they also want to be fulfilled in what they're doing. You know, and that's kind of a new paradigm for business because, you know, the 80s and 90s was more of like money at all costs, right? Even if it costs you your soul sort of thing, and which you know, saw the movies about that. Let's talk a little bit about your book. Your book is done. You're getting ready to release it. What's the title of the book and what's it about?
It's called Rising from the Sands. And it's basically an immigrant story from, you know, poverty to success in the most affluent part of the world. And the struggles, the triumphs, the strategies of entrepreneurship. It's a leadership book, an autobiography, a strategy book, comedy, you know, it's got everything in it.
But it
really boils down to, you know, there's a lot of tactical leadership strategies, marketing strategies, brand strategies, and just my story as to what I did to build this company and build a successful podcast, build a powerful brand. I'm the most followed person in the mortgage industry, but I don't use mortgage content as a strategy to grow because people, that doesn't entertain people.
I love it. So if somebody's listening to the show, they love what you're doing, they want to, you know, maybe somebody's listening going, hey, I need a mortgage. How do they find you? How do they follow you? How do they engage with eMortgage Capital?
So, I mean, to get me directly, you could find me on our website, emortgagecapital.com. And I'm right there under find a loan officer, you know, if you want. We pop up, you know, me, the founder, CEO, our president and chairman, you know, and 900 loan officers. So, but my page is first. But beyond that, follow me on Instagram, Joseph Shalaby. Follow me on LinkedIn, Joseph Shalaby, YouTube, Joseph Shalaby, TikTok, Snapchat. You know, my brand is everywhere. And then just email me directly, joe@emortgagecapital.com. And I'd get back to you immediately. If you follow me on those platforms, make sure to watch my show as well, Coffees for Closers, one of the top 25 podcasts on Apple Business. Coffee with a Z, it'll pop right up.
So what's the next 3 to 5 years look like for your company, but also you personally as your brand?
Yeah, you know, the next 3 to 5 years as a company, we're going to continue to scale. We're going to continue to gain more market share. We're going to continue to invest, you know, tens of millions of dollars in growing the brand, the platform, the ecosystem, and getting more market share. Personally, my brand, you know, I just want to continue to have massive brand awareness for, you know, in everyone in the mortgage industry, because through my brand strategy, that's what attracts all the top mortgage originators to our company. So me creating a massive brand was one reason. It was to attract top talent. And I think that my brand strategy is going to continue. I'm going to get, you know, millions and millions more followers to join. And that's going to just basically convert into hopefully more loan officers and hopefully more volume.
But Joseph, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be here. I can't wait for your book to come out. Give it a read.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.